Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんなところ。
Hey everyone, welcome to Waypoint Radio, episode 528. I am your host Patrick Clough because Rob has left us to become an esports expert and be in a documentary, and so I am here in his place to host this podcast. Thankfully. It's not Easter, but we can welcome someone else back from the dead. Renata Price.
Hello. I'm just like the Christ child.
Well, Jesus Christ got a prologue out on Steam recently.
He did.
I feel like it's all coming up. Well, coming up Jesus, I guess, is how it would go.
I want to get a theologian to play that game so bad. Oh, I want to put that game in front of the Pope so bad.
There's a very funny, IGN's, you know, does a thing where they just like capture every game at like the highest resolution possible just right. to show you what it looks like on some 4090 or whatever. And like in the caption was, and we've run this at max settings on a 4090, just as Jesus would have wanted. I was like, that's good. Shout outs to the socials person that is just trying to get through the day writing descriptions and managed to sneak that one through. But Ren, you were here, you were back. You had COVID. You've been mm-hmm. sicky for the last weekend. You came back one day and then COVID said
no.
Yeah. I came back and I was like, this will be fine. And then I had one of the worst headaches of my life. And I was like, this actually won't be fine. I'm going to go lay back down and maybe play some Pillars of Eternity if I'm able to think, turn my brain to mush.
So you are feeling better now? Yes. You are no like residual effects from the experience?
I'm all the way back. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. Listen, I could be wrong about that, but in my head, per my experience, I'm all the way back. I could just not remember what it feels like to be alive.
We're also joined by our producer, Ricardo Contreras. Cato, how's it going?
Excuse me.
Well, great. Cato also Look, has COVID.
I'm going to cut that out. Nah, it's not. It's not COVID. Whatever it is. I've tested multiple times being like,
well, you've been on and off sick for like 2 months, right? Not like sick, but just... I literally think it's the same thing, right?
I think it's the same thing. It's just moved to different parts of my body. It keeps getting punched out into different areas.
A little sick goblin.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
And like
time to go to your toes. Time to go to your lungs.
Every time it moves, I'm like, is this a new sickness? I should go get tested. And I go get tested. And they're like, it's not COVID, whatever it is. I'm like, great. At least I'm not COVID sick. I'm just normal sick.
Did y'all see the Oxford word of the year?
No.
What? No.
Oh, Cotty, you're going to love this. The Oxford word of the year is goblin mode.
What? Yes!
Yes, the Oxford Dictionary word of the year is goblin mode, which I take great joy in. I take great joy in
What's
the fact
the
that it is goblin mode.
Read it to me.
Okay, let me. I have it up, actually. Goblin mode, a slang term often used in the expressions in goblin mode or to go goblin mode, is a type of behavior which is unapologetically self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, or greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. Although first seen on Twitter in 2009, goblin mode went viral on social media in February 2022, quickly making its way into newspapers and magazines after being tweeted in a mocked-up headline. The term then rose in popularity over the months following as COVID lockdown restrictions eased in many countries, and people ventured out of their homes more regularly. Seemingly, it captured the prevailing mood of individuals who rejected the idea of returning to normal life or rebelled against the increasingly unattainable aesthetic standards and unsustainable lives exhibited on social media. Goblin mode.
On goblin mode.
Wow. Well, finally it's legitimate.
Is it goblin noise?
So it can't show up in Wordle because it's not. It's two words, right?
It's two
goblin mode.
It's more than five letters too.
You know, speaking of goblin modes, we here at Waypoint frequently go into goblin mode because of Waypoint Plus, and people have been asking, and it is finally here. Now it's an annual. Wasn't always an annual, but now it's an annual Waypoint holiday sale. Annual subscriptions are now 25% off with what is the code that we're using? Way Holiday. I wrote a different one because I wasn't sure if we'd assigned one yet, Kato.
Holloway
is right there.
All right.
Holloway.
I just feel like people are going to type that in wrong.
Yeah, that's
true.
Oh,
you think they're going to type in Hollowway, like Holloway, the name, as opposed to
I'm worried. We've had issues in the past, and then we have to correct people's subs when they sign up. But starting on Tuesday, December 6th, running through the end of the night, Eastern time. Do you want to give it to Pacific time so it stretches a little bit longer?
Can we do that for the people? I can't set the time. I set a day, and it crosses over at midnight UTC. Midnight UTC is 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific? That's how time works?
Yes, it's 3 hours. Yep, nailed it.
So that is the cutoff. I can't change the hours. I can just change the day it's going to happen on.
Okay, so that it'll run in for a week. You'll get a week, you know, starting on Tuesday, December 6th, running through that weirdly arbitrary time on Tuesday, December 13th. So if you go to waypointplus.com and then again, use that code, WAYHOLIDAY, you'll be able to get 25% off a, gift sub, if you're renewing, if you're upgrading, if you're gifting a Waypoint Plus subscription, those will all apply with the code. I know people have been patiently waiting for this to happen, and we're happy to finally be able to deliver on the holiday sale. We'll be doing some fun stuff over the week in order to celebrate the sale. I'm going to jinx it by saying it out loud. We are going to play an entire day of the Quarry on Wednesday. With one Forbes 30 under 30, Natalie Watson. I don't know that we'll beat the game, but boy, we're gonna play a big old chunk of it. And we managed to beat a different Dark Pictures anthology game before beating the Quarry, because we are just, I mean, Quarry's a much bigger game, but go ahead.
I was going to say, if you want to see a villain go goblin mode, you can do so by watching our last Quarry stream to catch up on everything, to kind of see what transpired, what decisions were made, if a certain person made some decisions at a certain point in time that would beget goblin mode being entered.
Well, you didn't enter goblin mode as much as a goblin entered you and tore your body to pieces.
I think we did enter the goblin.
Right. It may be the case. So Kato and Rob are going to be doing some in-person motorsports. As you listen to this, when this is live, I presume you'll be that'll be happening. So that'll be Rob is out doing some work for Vice. You're going to do it after the fact.
I'm trying to figure out what the time. I'm just not realizing. I've kind of double booked myself today.
All right. Well, Kato will figure that part out. We'll promote this elsewhere. But if you're listening to this, it may be after that stream has already happened. But it'll be before the Quarry stream occurs.
Yes, and definitely then, before the Quarry.
Yeah, and then we'll have other things happening through the course of the week. We'll probably have another stream that happens on Tuesday, next Tuesday, to sort of help promote the final day of the sale. Tentatively, I want to say that we might do a Game Awards thing on Thursday evening. Details to be determined on people's schedules and all that, but that is a big thing that's happening, and we might as well ride the Keeley wave if we can, because I'll be watching it anyway. So again, if you go to waypointplus.com, Tuesday, December 6th to Tuesday, December 13th, use the code WAYHOLIDAY at waypointplus.com to get 25% off of Waypoint Plus. And shout outs to all the folks that have, you know, allowed us to get to a point where we can even do another holiday sale, because that was definitely not necessarily a guarantee we hit live on that thing. And it has been a delight to get to this point. If you've been waiting for that sale, then there it is. It is live right now. Elsewhere, I would just want to highlight this. Oh, I didn't put in the article into Asana, but we don't really have to talk about this much, but I just saw this on Reddit when I was scrolling through the week's game news. Dark Souls creator Miyazaki has, quote, no idea what made Elden Ring such a hit. Quote, I try not to think about it too much. This was from an IGN article in which Miyazaki is, I'm sure, accepting one of many awards that will happen for Elden Ring over the coming months, and was asked in a follow-up about, like, this game being so much more successful than basically anything else from software has done in terms of, like, sheer sales numbers. And in the Q&A session, I guess it was like a PlayStation Partners Awards thing. Quote, honestly, I haven't analyzed it much, Miyazaki replied. It's true that sales were higher than those of our previous games, but I have no idea what the reason was. So even if I wanted to reproduce that success, I wouldn't be able to. I try not to think about it too much because I think it would be a bad idea to analyze it deeply and to consciously try and replicate it in another game. Which I think is like a really smart, funny and interesting. Yeah. I don't know how, in some level, I want to believe that's true. It's also possible that, like, you know, FromSoftware also has marketing department. Like, maybe Miyazaki's not doing this, but someone is crunching the goddamn numbers behind the scenes. But I think if it is true that Miyazaki tries to just push that stuff out and just makes the games that, you know, that he kind of, like, you know, makes alongside the rest of the staff at FromSoftware, that's pretty dope. that's a good way to be thinking about it. Elsewhere, have you seen what Fortnite looks like now? I'm gonna give you this link.
I did see. I was looking at Fortnite earlier. I've heard what they've added. I saw this post. I did not see the graphics post. I saw a mechanics post, and then I felt the need to go to twitter.com to talk about Fortnite to say that they put bows back in. They put bows back in Fortnite, and they put a bunch of Halo guns in there, and I'm just thrilled. And it looks like this.
Bows. I love bows. Bows. You put a bow in a video game, I won't use your other weapons.
Yes, this is Patrick, the kinship between us. The bows are so good. They also have Patrick. Yeah, have explosive bows.
That sounds great. I love a good explosive bow. Because then it's like I'm using a gun, but I can still say I'm being real stealthy and using a bow. That if I also happen to be attaching a grenade to this bow. Fortnite itself sort of kind of continues to be sort of the tip of the spear on Epic doing a lot of development on Unreal Engine, and they have since pushed through Unreal Engine 5.1, which adds a bunch of things that I can barely tell you what they do. Nanite, what's that? I don't know. Lumen? These all things I would find in virtual shadow maps, temporal super resolution. Well, we've all been waiting for that one to be added to Fortnite. The long story short is that, like, Fortnite looks sick as shit. It was already a game that I think we've been pretty impressed by the way that its art style can kind of adapt to whatever it needs to be, whether that was planned or something they kind of stumbled into as the game's gone along. But I think if you click on this blog and look at the way just the lighting effects, and I mean, it looks awfully good and continues to give me another reason to
having trouble imagining my cel shaded Goku running around in these images. That's going to be extremely funny.
You tell me Goku is going to be hanging out with Nanite Lumen? Really? Everyone is here. Everyone in is Fortnite. Here.
Goku's going to be ray traced.
Oh, I hope they ray trace.
You can ray trace. No, you can ray trace Goku. I'm looking right here. I'm looking in these things, hardware ray tracing settings. And so Goku can be ray traced.
I really.
Is the world ready?
I really want. You ever see those like realistic Pokemon drawings where somebody makes like a really like, this is what it would look like if it was like an actual animal? I want like that level of detailed drawing of Goku to be ray traced off is like the cel shaded version, ray traced on. All of a sudden you see pores and shit.
Realistic Goku.
Realistic. No, don't look at it.
Images. Realistic.
I feel like
Son Goku realistic. No, style, these are all just like a guy. Art.
This is just like a guy. People are making guys. I mean, like, that's a Goku. It's like, that's not a Goku. Take Goku face and then just give him pores. Take Goku shaped face, then give him.
You're suggesting.
Are you talking to an AI bot right now? Is that what you're doing, Kato?
Trying to get it to work.
You're trying to feed this. Is this a prompt that you're feeding or in real time over the podcast?
Here's one that's almost there. I think I found one that's almost there.
Suggesting that Toriyama should put pores on his character.
This is close. This is closer.
Ooh, that is. I don't like that.
Troubling. Oh. I hate this motherfucker.
Beak art. You're cursed. Stop
I don't want
it.
Him.
Stop
I don't want him anywhere around me.
Anyways, I think it'd be funny if you turned ray tracing on and got that.
That's just a new Unreal Engine filter. It's like actually. Now all of your characters are hype. We've contracted Beak Art to do a pass on Fortnite, and it's just hyper realistic version. Actually, that would rule.
Who's that?
This looks like Captain Marvel.
That's not Goku.
That's Yasified Goku. That's Yasified Aryan Goku.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh no.
Just a teeny bit of genocide happening.
Yeah, no. This is bad Goku. This is Goku if Goku believed what Saiyans believed in. Like this is dark. Goku.
Truly a Super Saiyan. Elsewhere, Brent, I'm hoping you can untangle this for me because I've tried. I've read a couple of articles, but I saw to begin with that someone said Nintendo. Evil Nintendo has said, we just can't do a Smash Brothers tournament. And I thought that seemed on its face to be possible because Nintendo has a long history of a fraught and complicated relationship when it comes to esports and tournament organizers more broadly. But since then, I'm learning about pandas. CEOs of these pandas are resigning. And I just don't know... Can you walk me through a little bit about what's going on with Smash at the moment?
I can walk you through a little bit. There's a lot of hearsay going on right now, but I can give you the broad
strokes.
It does
feel like every 20 minutes there's a new headline related to it as someone grabs a shovel and digs a little bit deeper in it. But yeah, what's the broadly going on here?
Okay, so basically, one sec, let me pull up. The tournament org is a really bad name. The tournament circuit was called Smash World Tour. And so Smash World Tour is specifically is Smash broadly, but generally focuses on Melee. Basically, there was a guy who popularized the Melee community because the Smash Brothers Melee is a game that came out on the GameCube, but has a really, really devoted fighting game community. Because it is basically the only thing like it. There is nothing else like Melee. It is pretty singular. Smash games since then have not been like Melee, right? And so a lot of Melee is played online through digital ISOs. There was basically one dude who helped repopularize Melee and make the high level player like techniques accessible to people. That guy goes on to found the Smash World Tour, which is basically the largest tournament circuit of Super Smash Bros. That exists. He makes this tournament, but here's the thing. It can't have official Nintendo licenses because it uses digital ISOs in some tournament cases, and also like they will not adhere to like the Nintendo branding, right?
Are they specifically using like ROM hacks? Is that like, or is there a specific reason they are using, like not running it on native hardware? Like, what does that enable them to do that obviously Nintendo would have take issue with?
Well, one, online tournaments cannot be played on native
hardware. Okay, gotcha. That makes sense.
And once you're in person, they are not adhering to Nintendo's branding standards. Is something that Nintendo is claiming, and so this tournament goes on for several, I think it's like 10 years, going on 10 years, Smash World Tour is going on. This year, the Smash World Tour folks go to Nintendo and they say, Nintendo, please, can we get licensed to do this? We will do your licensing. We will do this. Will you give us a license? And Nintendo goes, no, also stop. And then the tournament organizers go, you want us to stop? And Nintendo goes, yes, we would like you to stop from 2023 onwards, because Nintendo knows that if they cancel this tournament, they will get absolutely blasted by the Smash community. They will get absolutely devastated if they have the biggest tournament of the year, if it comes out that Nintendo had this tournament canceled. And so according to Nintendo, they said that you can finish this year's tournament, but you can't do next year's tournament circuit. Because this is the thing that Nintendo says, and they go, and then the Smash World Tour claims that Nintendo told them to shut everything down, including this year's tournament, which, by the way, this is a tournament that is looking at like losing $300,000. Because it is looking at vendors, it is looking at tournament organizers, it is looking at like hundreds of flights cross-country and like cross-continental flights. This is like a big deal, right? And so it shuttering last minute is pretty serious. And so those are the claims by Smash World Tour and Nintendo, respectively. Then Smash World Tour claims that the CEO of Panda Global was telling other people who Smash World Tour was trying to partner with that the tournament was going to be shut down, basically suggesting that Panda Global was trying to sabotage Smash World Tour such that it would not be able to operate. And this is a big deal because Panda Global also runs a big Smash tournament. And so if the CEO of Panda Global...
essentially a rival Smash tournament that yes. is not as big, but not as big as the yes. Smash World Tour.
Yes.
Wait, isn't...
And is officially licensed by Nintendo. That's the key, is that the Panda Global is one of Nintendo's, the people who are officially licensed to run tournaments. They're like,
whatever, we'll do the branding. Send us the stickers. We'll put them up.
Right. And so the Smash World Tour folks basically claim that the Panda CEO was trying to sabotage them, both in terms of partnerships and also with Nintendo, at which point Panda Global has said, okay, our CEO is stepping down because the CEO has made comments previously that about Smash World Tour about like other tournaments to people, such that they're like, okay, yeah, no, we'll admit this was an L. All right, we'll kind of take the L on what he said, but are claiming that he did not actively try to talk to partners and like other organizations about Smash World Tour being shut down. And so a lot of weird hearsay, all revolving around what actually caused this major tournament to be closed, and no one is quite sure right now, because there are three parties, two of which are saying totally different things, and then the third that has been at the last minute roped in and then ousted their CEO over someone else's tournament drama.
I mean, it seems like, you know, this started in why sort of when I saw the initial headline and kind of just shrugged at it, was because like the amount of times, like I said earlier, that Nintendo has kind of gotten into complicated relationships and drama with the very community that allows Smash Brothers to remain as relevant as it is year over year, especially between major releases, and especially with Smash, you know, the most recent Smash Brothers, like essentially finishing development, no more characters. Like, part of what will keep Smash Brothers alive is these tournaments, or is this like this fan base that never goes away until Nintendo gets around to announcing another one. But they've just always seemed to have trouble figuring out what their relationship with that community is, especially given the whole Melee situation, in which, you know, Nintendo clearly does not like that the community has such a deep affinity for this one particular take on Smash Brothers as they produce new ones, even if Ultimate was quite liked, it seems like. But it seems like this is all like it started there, but then it has now spiraled into sort of like a broader community drama that suggests something a little more complicated than just Nintendo having some issues with an organizer and how they were kind of putting together the tournament.
I mean, part of it is that, like, I think that the fundamental, like, I don't, you can call it a strategy error or not, but like the thing that Nintendo does is that it is. I think that to like operate a a business currently, especially like in games, most companies have come to terms with the fact that some of your players are going to operate in a legal gray area. And that, like, to have a community for your video game, people are going to act in a weird gray area that is kind of outside of your control, right? Whether it be from the integration of mods into, or like mod managers into your game, to the way in which like devs will, you know, encourage communities to run their own tournaments, blah, 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 blah. And Nintendo is completely, will just completely demolish any gray area work. And is like, I none of this is surprising to me. It could come out that Nintendo did say to shut down the tournament, and I wouldn't be that surprised. Like, they're a weird company that I feel like doesn't actually, continues to not really understand, or has made different priorities than I would regarding how to run communities.
And if you're going to exact control, not that, you know, studios like Riot are necessarily like paragons of virtue, but they have like these companies that have multiplayer games that are going to have huge infrastructures around them external to the day-to-day operations of the game. They build out the internal infrastructure to let external organizers do the work they need to do. And I've always gotten the impression that Nintendo sort of does kind of the bare minimum when it comes to this, and it can get them into trouble, and it can create a lot of tension with the very audience that, you know, helps sustain the company in between releases. Whereas, you know, you have, you know, I'm not shocked that Nintendo isn't, you know, like building collegiate esports for, you know, Smash Brothers or anything like that. There's not a company interested in doing that. But when you don't spend more time building that out, having the people in place, having the regulations in place, I think you end up in places like this. Because I'm not surprised that there's like messiness amongst community organized tournaments. That's sort of the nature of it, right? Like, right. These are like loosely organized, barely like kind of put together things, you know, often in the best case scenario. And so when something like this gets a little rickety and egos get involved, not super shocking that all of a sudden it becomes kind of like drama stacked on top of drama stacked on top of drama, all sort of like linked back to Nintendo not necessarily having like the best hold on how to even handle a community for Smash Brothers, which was true 15 years ago and remains true today. Lastly, before we get into some of the games that we have been playing, just wanted to note, because we've been following a lot of what's happening with Activision Blizzard, is that there's the second studio has unionized over at Blizzard Albany. I'll quote from this Polygon piece by Nicole Carpenter, who has done a lot of great work on this over at Polygon more broadly. Quote, Activision Blizzard quality assurance workers at the company's Blizzard Albany studio in upstate New York voted Friday in favor of forming a union. It's the second union under Activision Blizzard following Raven Software's vote in May. The group of approximately 20 QA workers called Game Workers Alliance Albany was given the go-ahead vote in October, after which Activision Blizzard requested the election be delayed for a board review. The National Labor Relations Board denied that request on Wednesday. Like with Raven Software, Activision Blizzard wanted to have the entire studio vote on the union. Blizzard Albany's QA workers have been voting in the lead up to the count, which was originally scheduled for November 18th, but was delayed due to bad weather, a blizzard. On Friday, the election results came in 14 yes votes on the union with no votes against it. There were 18 eligible voters, the board said, with 3 votes challenged. Game Workers Alliance Albany, like Raven Software, is represented by Community Workers of America. Blizzard Albany associate test analyst Amanda Deep said in a statement that the group was inspired by Raven Software's QA union, and that Albany hopes to inspire more video game studios to unionize. And then Activision's kind of response to all this, which was something that Ren, you were following when you were writing about this, was essentially, we want the whole company to vote. The statement they gave to Polygon was, quote, we're considering all options with a focus on what is best for all employees and to provide the best games for our millions of players. We still believe our entire Albany team should have the right to vote. This is about fundamental fairness and rights for every member of the team. Ren, as someone who's been kind of following this as it's gone along, you know, is there anything surprising about like this result or where we are in the process?
No, I mean, like Blizzard's attempt here was laughable. From the like lawyers I spoke to and experts on like union the history of like labor organizing and labor law in America, this is like the most standard approach you could do. Is just to drag it out as long as you can, because unions have fewer resources than companies, right? And so even if this was going to, the purpose of attempting to impound the votes wasn't to win. They didn't want to win. They just wanted to drag it out longer for people and see if they could wear them down. And they failed pretty miserably because the arguments were bad. It took the judge, if that was happen on the, okay, yeah. It took about 20 days for the judge to go, no, that's dumb. We're not impounding the votes. That's silly. Blizzard's argument was multifaceted, and all of the facets were bad. And so it's unsurprising to me that the NLRB just pushed it through. Also, because again, the thing to note is that the National Labor Relations Board currently is pretty pro-union. We are in a pretty pro-union phase of the NLRB, and so this is not surprising. It's a huge win, but it is like the work was already done by the organizers. It was just kind of getting it over the finish line. I think this is really excellent, and I'm extremely happy for them.
Yeah, I'm really encouraged. It's, you know, now, you know, you have kind of back-to-back sort of wins. And obviously, as we've seen what happened with Starbucks and Amazon, like, they're not always going to turn out this way, right? Like, especially as these votes potentially, like, get bigger or studio-wide, I think people should be prepared that it's not always just going to be all unions all the time. It's a more complicated sort of trajectory than that. But given where we have been in the past in regards to unions, and we still don't have contracts for any of these, like, that is like the really complicated next step for you know, these QA firms that are unionizing within Activision Blizzard. But boy, just to have even these even if it's just QA teams, even if it's just a handful, they are steps on a ladder to something more meaningful and give a lot of hope and guidance to other places that want to do it. You need people to do like this really gutsy work and get, even if it's just a handful of people organizing, so that you can be inspired to do that elsewhere. And I don't know where that's going to happen. It's hard to tell where the dominoes are going to fall going forward, but, you know, especially given that we are entering like more broadly an economic contraction period in the economy, it's like, you know, it's showing up in weird and different ways. More people can be employed than ever, and the market goes, well, that sucks. But games as an industry expanded so wildly during COVID that there was going to be a natural contraction regardless of what happened. And boy, the thing you would want in place most ideally when there are going to be cuts, when there's going to be things squeezed, is that you could be organized and represented so you can be at the table when those decisions are made and have some kind of influence on how stuff like that happens. You know, these unions are not there yet, but they have gotten themselves, you know, a foot in the door to be able to have a little more agency in that process. And I hope it remains inspiring for other folks to try and do the same, because it is definitely, if you can do it at Activision Blizzard, yeah, boy, it sure seems like you might be able to do it anywhere. I hope that is some of the lessons here, is that it's one thing when, I forget that indie studio that tragically went under.
Vodio.
Yes, you know, that was cool, and it was great that they were voluntarily recognized. You know, that's, we'd love to see it, where the boss just goes, yep, you should do that. And then that studio went under through no fault of the union or the organizing, and the head of the company was Asher Vollmer, I believe is the name of the head of that studio, was quick to point that out. But it's another for it to happen within a much larger company infrastructure. And so hopefully it's not the first of many, but the two of many going forward.
If there is anything to learn from this, I would say that micro units are good. They are easier to organize, and companies are very afraid of them. So if you're worried about organizing your whole company, just organize your team, organize the people you work directly with.
You can always expand. It's what we did here, right? Like we had different units, and then there was a moment during our most recent contract where it seemed to make a lot of sense to actually group people into a larger bucket. And so, like, when you find that common ground over time with, like, different sort of, like, union units, maybe there is an instance in which, like, hey, actually, there's so much overlap in terms of what we all want. Like, we might as well be able to have a bigger fist that we can swing in negotiations. But I think what this is showing is that it's just easier to get a smaller group on the same page. And then you can figure out where those, like, kind of shared values and shared sort of experiences at the job can overlap and maybe allow for a bigger unit to come out of it as a result. Elsewhere, outside of news, Ren, I know that your gaming over the last week and a half has been a little up and down, but you have written down here that you've been playing Warhammer Darktide, which I know is a game a lot of folks have been looking forward to. It's just an early access right now, right?
No, it is officially
it had
released.
A beta period.
It had a beta period, and now it's it's officially released.
Uh-huh,
I'm doing a lot. I'm doing a lot of winking. It's 100% still in a beta. This is how there are features that aren't in the game yet. Crafting mechanic aspects of the crafting system aren't in there yet. It is fundamentally not done. Which is a bummer.
What is Warhammer Darktide?
Warhammer 40K Darktide is basically a horde shooter, meleeer, I guess, in the tradition of a Left 4 Dead, of a Warhammer Vermintide 1 and 2. Darktide is taking that structure established in Vermintide, which is a complex melee system and character abilities against thousands of rats. Vermintide is about fighting rats. It's called Vermintide. There's a tide of vermin. Rob.
I guess I didn't put that together. Is it the year of the rat? We got a Plague Tale and Darktide. Like, rat fans or people who don't like rats are feasting.
Well, Darktide doesn't have rats. That's Vermintide. That's the Warhammer, not the Warhammer 40K.
Okay.
Patrick, you're being so silly. You didn't hear the one syllable that was different. No, Darktide, you're fighting guys. Well, let's be honest, they're guys who've gone goblin mode. The ultimate form of goblin mode is to pray to the chaos god Nurgle.
Who?
Nurgle.
From Garfield.
From Disease?
From Garfield.
You'll recognize you'll recognize Nurgle from his work on Disease.
Is that Nurgle's specialty?
Yes. Is on grimy guys. On poxes.
What's the Garfield character?
Nurmal.
I'm thinking of Nurmal.
You're thinking of Nurmal Kato. No. Kato.
Yeah, I was trying to make a joke about Nurmal. they're praying to Nurmal.
Okay. I get how you would be confused. Sometimes Nurmal from Garfield does spread pox and pestilence wherever he goes. But like, that's a time to time thing. It's not like what defines him. Unlike Nurgle, that's what defines Nurgle the spread of pox and pestilence.
Are gods in Warhammer, is that like
real?
So they're real. They're like real. Actual gods, like not just like big, powerful wizards that people just treat as gods?
No.
Okay.
Chaos gods, real. Real gods.
So they're actually in a different like ethereal plane.
Yes. You can go there. You don't want to go there. Let me be clear. You don't want to go there. You do not want to go to the chaos
Michelle
realm.
Really wants to go, though.
Michelle Obama needs
spring,
to go.
Spring break in the heaven realm of Warhammer 40K.
Don't go there. It's not good.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Here's the problem. Patrick. Nurgle loves to have a cult. Loves to have people praying to the chaos god of Nurgle to spread their disease and pestilence. And once that happens, your shit's kind of fucked. Like, I'll be honest, the ship you're on, because Warhammer has these like hive worlds, which are basically planet-sized cities filled with like billions upon billions upon billions of people. And when you have that many people and you have like one cult of Nurgle, shit gets real bad real fast. And so basically in Darktide, you are one of four classes of formerly imprisoned pretty much always wrongly imprisoned. Members of the Imperium, citizens of the Imperium, who are broken out of prison and then end up saving a, I think she's an Inquisitor. Yeah, you save an Inquisitor. She's hot and cool. You save a hot, cool Inquisitor, and then she's like, yes, of course, that's what unites all Inquisitors. And then she's like, thank you. Would you like to fight as a military conscript for the rest of your life? And you're like, well, the other option is execution. And she's like, you're correct. The other option is execution. So would you like to fight for the Imperium for the rest of your life? And you go, yeah, I fucking guess. And then you go into these big maps and do objective-based gameplay while fighting hordes of hundreds and hundreds of grimy boys, of guys who, let's be honest, have gone goblin mode. In the worst way possible. They haven't just gone goblin mode. They've gone ghoul mode. They've gone grimy ghoul mode. It's not good. It's really bad in there. And you got to chop them up with your big chain sword. And it's just a really fun horde-based like shooter slash melee-er. There are four classes. Each are like different takes on what the Imperium does. One of them is the Ogryn, who are abhumans, who are just like, they're big guys. And Ogryn is just, let me show you how big an Ogryn is in comparison.
Abhuman?
Abhuman. It's not good. Abs? No.
Big.
They're no, big. They're unfortunately. Big guys. Let me see if I can find a dark tide. Here, I'll search dark tide omen. Dark Tide Ogryn.
Well, I assume it's this person on the cover art. Let me paste this if this is correct. So like this, the big guy.
And he's that big. Is scaled to how big they are compared to the other.
So that's a class?
Game. Yes.
Yeah.
You can just be that big guy.
Why wouldn't you just be that big guy?
Well, because the other classes are also really fun.
Because the other class, one of like, the other like, classes can blow people's brains up with magic. Yeah.
So there's the Ogryn, who are big boys. They're very defensive. They can smack guys around. They've got a big shield sometimes. They can carry fuck off big weapons. Then you have Zealots, who are like the game's like heavy melee class. They're humans who like to carry like dual-handed chain swords and just like through motherfuckers. And then there are Preachers, who are like a... Sorry. Sharpshooters, who are like supports slash like rifle focused. And then finally, there's the class that I like to play, the Psykers.
Yeah.
And Psykers use their brain powers to blow people up. And so the game is really well designed for one of these like Left 4 Dead likes. The rhythm of each class is totally unique unto them.
At this point, are they even Left 4 Dead likes as much as I feel like the Warhammer 40K games are almost more the mainstream, like it's been so long since Left 4 Dead.
Right.
Usually when I hear people excited about a new one of these types of games, it's actually whatever the new one is from Warhammer 40K right. at this point.
It's the Vermintide. It's the,
yeah.
The classes are really fun is the thing, and distinct from one another. So like the pitch on the Psyker, right? Take your standard, like Left 4 Dead, you're fighting a horde, right?
Mm-hmm.
What the Psyker does is the Psyker's job is to take out the elite enemies instantly. The Psyker has an ability where they can just instantly kill most kinds of enemy by making their brains explode with their cool psychic powers. That seems like a pretty
cool power.
Yeah, like, it's really good.
So is this the kind of situation where, like, you know, if I'm playing the big boy, I'm doing more crowd control and, like, you know, and, like, it's not, precision is not necessarily the name of the game, but when you're playing as the class that you're playing as, that's very much kind of, I don't know, like if it's necessarily a perfect analog, but like a sniper class where it's like, hey, like you have a very specific role to take out these very specific enemies. Like, don't fuck it up.
For a little bit. So part of the thing is that like as a Psyker, there's a really long charge time on that ability. So your friends have to protect you. So it's like, okay, cool. We see a sniper because the snipers are the most annoying fucking elites in this game. They will one or two shot you. They're really, really dangerous. We see a sniper over there. Galt will say, because I play this with Galt a lot, Galt will be like, Red, he's a sniper over there.
Galt took a day off of work. Didn't even wait long enough for me to, do you need a code, Galt? I already bought it. I was like, okay, Galt. I mean, it's delightful that you can, like, you know, given what we all do for a living, that there can still be a game that gets you that excited that you want to take. Like, I mean, genuinely, like, I don't feel that because games, I have such a different relationship with them. And when Galt told me, like, that's what they were doing, I was like, that brings me so much joy that you can be that excited for a game that you want to do that. Like,
yes,
you good, just get it.
It's so good. Galt's also really fun to play with. He has a very good group of people that I enjoy playing with a lot. And so Galt would be like, Ren, there's a sniper over there. And then I blow up the sniper's head. What that does is it spends it raises a bar called my peril bar. And if I do too many of those head explosion attacks in a row, I explode and die instantly. basically, you have a bar where it's like you have to manage how much chaos energy how much warp energy you're
reaching
out to.
Isn't that just reflective of life itself? I'm just working on my chaos energies.
Exactly. But it also gives you a buff that buffs your other damage types. And so the Psyker gets into this really cool rhythm of killing enough enemies with the brain burst attack to keep stacks of this buff up. You want 4 stacks to 6 stacks, depending on your character. Currently, I only have 4 stacks. I want to get up to 6. And so 4 stacks of this damage buff. And so once you have that damage buff, you then switch off of your brain burst attack to your actual weapons, which also have peril specific abilities. And so the really cool rhythm of the Psyker is being this extremely powerful single target DPS character and then getting all of these damage buffs by doing single target DPS and then switching to a crowd control character who's all about taking out a big horde of enemies while you have this attack buff on. And so the rhythm becomes about trying to stem off the horde while also maintaining this buff by taking out enemies with this like long charge attack. And it's a really, really satisfying rhythm. And the Psyker specific weapons, the Force Sword and the Force Staff, are really fun. The Force Sword has an ability that basically just lets you one shot any elite for less peril than the brain burst, but you don't get a stack off of it. And so it's basically you're like, oh shit, I should not have let myself get in the situation button because it charges instantly and kills instantly. And then the other one is a staff that can have a bunch of different elements tied to it that can do like crowd control abilities. And so the Psyker is all about this rhythm of switching from single target DPS to crowd control in a way that is just like extremely fucking satisfying. And every class has a distinct but ever changing and ever dynamic role like that. It's really cool and very fun to play.
I know you noted at the top that it's kind of a work in progress, even though it's not formally in early access. Do you think there's enough here that you would tell people like, hey, it's worth checking out? Or is this kind of a, hey, it's really encouraging, maybe give it, you know, a couple weeks, a couple months? Like, where do you kind of feel you're at on the game at the moment?
There's plenty of video game here. Also plenty of tech issues is the problem. There's as much video game as there is tech issue. I'm still having crashes. If you turn on ray tracing, your game is going to run like shit.
I saw that they turned literally server side have turned it off where you just cannot play with it because it was causing so many issues that they couldn't quite figure out. I mean, you can always tell like a game is both exceptionally popular and the community is a little grumbly when, like, right now this game has mixed reviews yet has 33,000 of them. So it's like everyone is buying this game and is also going, like, they really like it and they'd like it to be better, which is a good place to be, right? Like, that's, you know, you could be doing worse, but it sounds like maybe the worst thing in the world would not be to let this game kind of stretch its legs for a little bit while they figure out some of the fundamentals. But it sounds like the bones are strong for this to be really special.
It is very
all right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, a break that, frankly, you don't have to listen to. If you sign up for Waypoint Plus using the holiday sale, using the code WAYHOLIDAY at waypointplus.com. But if you're one of those people that doesn't have that or just loves listening to ads, who knows? Everyone's got their thing. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hold up.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And we're back. This has been sitting on our planning document for a couple of weeks now, but I finally want to put a bow on it, if only to make myself feel guilty for not having played it yet. And yet Kato and Ren both have. Signalis, a game that Ren was extremely high on when you were talking about it, I don't know, you know, a month and change back. Kato then went in and played it, and my understanding is that both of you have finished it. And I'm curious how it ended up. Kind of, I guess we haven't heard what you thought of it to begin with, because so maybe why don't we start there before we talk about how the game finished up.
Yeah, Signalis, I really enjoyed it. Kind of a stunning, stunningly put together game, like aesthetically, I think.
Yes.
And it, for people who don't remember or missed the first time around, it's essentially a top-down view, sort of, Resident Evil. Really what it is like horror Metal Gear Solid. Like it has the same kind of camera views, and kind of movement and stuff. So, that's actually what I more closely kind of relate it to as far as gameplay goes. I think it does it throughout the game does like some really, really, kind of amazing things with perspective. And there are a few times when, the like concept of time and memory, are really interesting in this game, which is, you know, it's a low poly game. You know, it looks like it could have maybe come out on the PS2, but or PS1, if you like squint, it's like, you know, one of those where it's like
they're playing in the aesthetic space without necessarily the making themselves technically beholden.
You know, it tells the story. You play as a replicant, which are these humanoids that it's not 100% clear to me whether or not they're all the same. I mean, they're called replicants. So if they're all each model is exactly the same copy of the same person, but
they are.
They're right. Like
yes. So each every of the model lines
is like one person. Yeah.
Yes. Replicants are basically what happens is they find a human gestalt and they take their brain. They take the bioresonance of their brain and they basically scan the brain and they put it into a line of robot bodies called replicants.
Right.
And you are playing an Elster unit who is one of these replicants, one of the rarest types of replicants. And part of the thing is that replicants both do and do not have the memories of their gestalts. If your replicant begins exhibiting the memories of their gestalt, that is a problem.
They're meant to be copies that in if that person got amnesia, like, you know, they remember things about the world or like they know things about the world enough to function within the world, but aren't supposed to have the memories of the actual person. Right.
Right. They have skills, not memories.
Yeah. Obviously, and you learn this throughout the game, you know, being made in order to kind of be a new labor force. And there's like a bunch of different political kind of goings on in this like universe. There's an empire that I forget if the empire originally made them or they were made to fight against the empire. It's a little wishy-washy at times on the exact details of that, but It's one of those where you're essentially getting most of your lore through, this is the part that's most like Resident Evil, where it has like, when you pick up an item, it has that little like overlay of the text on top of the item as you like read what's on it.
Structure wise, the game structurally is a Silent Hill. It is structurally a Silent Hill, a Resident Evil, but I would say closer to a Silent Hill than a Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Says the person who just played a bunch of Silent Hill games.
Yes. Yes, I do. Yes. And that is yes. I know that. And also know that Signalis understands what it means to evoke Silent Hill and invoke the exact visual language of Silent Hill.
Yeah.
One of the like the major aesthetic markers of Signalis is going down hole after hole after hole, getting deeper and deeper into the earth. And that is 100% the second half of Silent Hill 2.
Is it earth?
Yes.
Is it ground? Well,
into the earth.
or is it flesh? As you get deeper and deeper, you start to question whether or not the thing you're in is alive or not. But it has this really fun kind of old school classic. This was like if you played Metal Gear Solid, at the end of Metal Gear Solid, you would get like a rank or whatever. It'd be like your Snake mm-hmm. rank, depending on how you played the game. Signalis does this with its endings. It has, I believe, 4 total endings. One of them you get through mm-hmm. a very specific sequence of like finding items and like that's a whole thing. The other 3 though are based on your play style, basically.
This is also Silent Hill. This is also Silent Hill okay, 2 yeah. and 1.
Essentially I just think that it's one of those where, like, I think the thing that I want to say is, like, it's better than the sum of its parts. Like, it leans very heavily on the references it's making, but somehow doesn't feel derivative even then, right? Like, it's very, like, obvious where it's pulling its inspirations from. But I think most of those pulls are mechanics that even themselves are tweaked or aesthetics that are also, you know, made their own, but
it doesn't feel like story a knockoff,
right?
Which is frequently when I've seen, you know, games like, and I, you know, love a Resident Evil like or a Silent Hill like, but too often they feel like, oh boy, you just wanted to make a new Silent Hill game. And they have made a pale imitation that like feels it's in the ballpark, but not in the way that you think it does. And it sounds like part of what's so impressive about Signalis is that it's definitely leaning on and pulling from all these influences while defining its own identity and is better for it.
It wears its influences on its sleeve, but it doesn't feel derivative. And I think that's like hard to do. And the big thing is that they're not trying to tell a story that is exactly like any of the things they're referencing, right? Like it's a synthesis of a couple of the different things that they're referencing and has their own like kind of twist to it that I think makes it their own, you know, like they did a spectacular job. And if you're a fan of those types of games, you absolutely need to check this game out. It's on Game Pass. Go, it's free if you have game free, you know. Whatever, go fucking I know download. What
you mean. Like if you're already subbing, it's short. It is there.
It's also like,
what's short?
I don't know. 8 hours. It's like eight. Okay. It's like 8 to 10.
8
hours.
To 10 hours. Yeah, yeah. Actually, okay. Actually short. Not like, yeah. So,
The last time we checked in with you, you were towards the end, but had not necessarily seen it all the way through. Did you feel like? I know you're very high on the narrative and the storytelling. Do you feel like it landed? Because that's definitely games like this can... You can enjoy the experience and go, well, horror stuff doesn't usually end well anyway. That's okay. It's kind of intrinsic to the genre and like the storytelling that frequently happens in the genre. But it sounds like you're actually saying this one lands well.
I think that Signalis is one of the smartest games I've played. In recent memory, I think that comparisons to Silent Hill 2 are warranted, also in terms of like narrative quality. I think that this is like a really, really brilliantly done game that ends just fucking incredibly. It lands so hard for me and like completely reframed the way that I think about like palliative care and like caregiving as an act. It is fucking incredible. It's probably my number two game of the year. And that is with the Renata's Year of Narrative marker. Renata's Year of Narrative bangers.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's a good transition to just a little bit of what I've been playing. I basically have put God of War Ragnarok, as much as I'm enjoying it, on pause. Because it's like, okay, I could either spend the next couple of weeks finishing this or finish nothing else. Callisto Protocol, which we talked about last week, a game that I'm not super high on, but I am going to play more of because I just like games like this, and I'm okay with this one being kind of mediocre. But also, I don't need to see any more of that. Like, I will get to that. I will return to that. And so I'm kind of going, I basically in front of me, I have like 2 weeks to try and sprint through a handful of games as I think about what the year is, how I want to structure my own list. And Signalis is one that I've thought about, but even 8 to 10 hours, I'm like, shit, that would be my next 2 weeks. I could, that's all I could do. And so I've instead had to try and structure these where I'm like digging through, okay, what are games that I know I'm going to love, but I definitely need to play more of. And so I've jumped right back into Metal Hellsinger, a game I really, really enjoyed when it came out in September. I am enjoying even more now that I'm about halfway through it and I'm working towards the back half of the game. When I looked up on how long to beat, it was like 3.5 hours long. 3.5 hours long?
Oh, my God.
You're singing a great tune for me, Metal Hellsinger. I think I'm going to end up spending more time in it because I'm really enjoying the little bonus. After you finish sort of like a level where you fight a boss, usually get a new weapon. There are also like these challenges that can, you get these perk cards that can like let your chain continue if you like get off the beat, or your ultimate attack can refresh faster. And then you can upgrade those perks if you do these challenges, which will, like, for example, one of them is your weapon is going to change every kill, which makes the arena like kind of challenging to get through because you're rotating through all these weapons and not necessarily the ones that you prefer to use, because you can go into each area regardless of song and have like your own personal loadout. And so I'm enjoying that. Like what I said before, only holds up even more. Metal Hellsinger, kick-ass game, enjoying it. I think I'm going to try and finish that in the next day or two. And then I said it and I'm taking it back because I felt guilty about it. Like I felt a deep shame that the Forbes 30 Under 30 Natalie Watson, I would not play the game that she spent so many hours working on for the last 2 years. And so that's the other game, because I looked that up and I was like, oh, you can do it in like 6-ish. I was like, okay, yeah, I could do that. And I could do Metal Hellsinger before I have to like formalize a list. And so I haven't played Immortality yet, but that is, I'm putting it down. I'm putting a marker down that I will play and finish that before the game of the year stuff is up. Exactly what I guess it's worth mentioning, you know, if you've been following Waypoint for the last 6 years, we had grand ambitions for game of the year stuff in the past that also followed a grander size staff. We will be doing a handful of things to celebrate the end of the year. You know, it'll be a little more modest and in kind of in line with what we've done in the past couple of years. But we've got some stuff planned that I think people will enjoy, which is partially why I'm trying to play some other games. And this is also a request. I remember, what was the game from 2 years ago that I played at the last second and ended up being one of my favorite games of the year? It's like a little
2 years ago?
Yeah, it was kind of like Animal Crossing-ish, like in aesthetic, a tail, a walk, shit.
A short hike. Called?
A short hike. God, that game was so good.
Yeah.
And I played that at the last possible second. And, you know, part of the problem with playing games in the last possible second is that you can misjudge how much it's affecting you because you're kind of just doing it all in the moment. But no, that game held up. I still think A Short Hike is one of the best games I've played the last couple of years. So this is my formal request to you, the listener. Games that have come out this year, especially of the 60 to 90 minute or 2 to 3 hour variety, that you absolutely think I should check out, like that I should try and plug in before the year is up, like please write in with those suggestions, either formally to into our question bucket, or just, you know, send me a DM or at me on Twitter, because I'm definitely in that mode where I'm trying to carve out extra time to play those games. So if you have any recommendations, please let me know. Before we get to the question bucket, though, Ren, why were you playing Pillars of Eternity? Which is no judgment on Pillars of Eternity, but how does one arrive? I assume in a mirage of sickness, but where do we end up with playing an old, not old, but, you know, old in terms of the games we talk about? RPG. Yeah.
So what happened was, I said to myself, before I got sick, I was like, I'm going to start playing Final Fantasy Tactics, on my PlayStation Vita when I'm not, don't have to do anything at work. I'm going to go to the cafe.
I'm tired of waiting for Natalie and Rob to finish System Shock.
Legitimately, I was like, I would like to play the video game Final Fantasy Tactics, please. And so I started playing Final Fantasy Tactics, and I was like, and then I got sick. And when I got sick, I was like, I hunger for tactics. I feel like shit. I feel like dog shit. I hunger for strategy. I hunger for tactics. I hunger for an RPG. And so I picked up my Nintendo Switch and I saw that Pillars of Eternity was on sale for $10 on the Nintendo Switch. Now you might be thinking to yourself, Renata, did you play a CRPG on the Nintendo Switch? Yes, I did. Was it a good idea? No, it fucking wasn't. Listen.
No, I famously remember this game, like, the audience being pretty upset, and they eventually just abandoned patching it.
They did. They sure... Hey, let me tell... Whoa. Hey, Patrick, buddy, let me tell you. They sure fucking did abandon patching it. I have had more crashes in that game than I think any game I've ever played. The loading screens take between, I'd say, 15 seconds and like a minute and a half. And when you have consistent crashing, listen, I could have beaten Pillars of Eternity by now if I had not lost what I'm going to guess is probably 2 hours to bugs and crashes and other assorted problems. I have learned the list of spells I can't use, because if I use those spells, it will disable all of my spells.
What?
So I know that I can't use the Chanter spell. Summon Drake.
Get Renata a Steam Deck.
I know I can't do that. I know, and that's the thing, Patrick. That's the thing. The reason that I got it on the Nintendo Switch is that Nintendo Switch can live on couch. Mm-hmm. And my head hurts so bad.
Yeah.
My head and body hurt so bad. So I'm going to apply body to couch. Body only go on couch. Head hurts so bad. Only couch. Never chair. Never ever chair.
What is Valve is doing a thing for the Game Awards where they're giving away a Steam Deck every minute if you're watching through Steam. just load up a browser, right? Yeah. And just see if you can get your number pulled.
Get my number pulled.
Because it sounds like you could actually just catch up to where you're at in the game pretty quickly if you were playing it on.
Oh, no, I'm at the end.
Oh, you are? Oh, wow. You've actually gotten that far.
No, Patrick. Yeah, I want to be clear. When I get severely depressed or very sick, I enter goblin mode.
That's not a short game.
Patrick, I know. I have been alone in my apartment by myself for the last week and change. Just sitting in silence. My options are sit in silence in my empty apartment, or play Pillars of Eternity. And so I may or may not have beaten the game's first three acts, the first half of the expansion White Marches, and also all of the bounties, which are the additional enemies you can fight for just for some loot. And also, I will start the White Marches Part 2 probably after work today, and can kind of run through that one real quick.
Okay, this all right. 36 hours for the main story, 8 hours for the White March Part 1, 8 hours for White March. That's okay. That's a little bit less than I'm less taken aback. That actually makes a ton of sense for just a week on a couch, passing out in between like naps and things like that. Doing 60 hours is pretty normal.
Yeah, I would say I would say that I've put between 60 and 70 hours into Pillars of Eternity.
Okay.
Right. In the last week. But here's what I'll say. Man, no. Hey, y'all heard of this Josh Sawyer guy? He seems
Petamit as a game that I think people really liked this year.
Yeah, Petamit's really, I've heard it's really good. It turns out that guy's really good at writing. That guy's really good at putting words into a video game. I'm gonna spoil the turn. So if you care about Pillars of Eternity spoilers, skip ahead like a minute. Pillars of Eternity has a lore reveal that is one of the sickest things I've ever seen, which is that it reveals at the very end of the game that all of the gods were actually made by people, because the previous society of ancients that you were finding ruins of throughout the game basically got so good at soul magic and so good at science that they basically were like, okay, we can scientifically prove that the gods aren't real. Either they're dead or they never existed. And then they went, well, that fucking sucks. That's a huge bummer. Wait, we gotten really good at soul magic. What if we took an entire nation's worth of people, tossed them in a soul blender, and then made a new pantheon of gods from the energy?
That's good.
And then they
good
make,
for them.
They make a new pantheon. And then the game takes place in the ruins of that civilization.
Went wrong.
Oh, I mean, they put everyone in the blender, Patrick. I mean, they put everyone in the blender. What they did was they put everyone in the blender except for like 8 dudes. And those 8 dudes went around proselytizing about these new gods. And then they did not have children, so their memories would fade into history. And so basically the civilization wiped out all trace of themselves so they could become the new gods of the world. And so then the game then takes place looking at a dispute between these extremely human, extremely fallible gods that we made. It is a game that is like deeply interested in how people construct identity, both on like a like cultural and social level, but also on the individual level. What do you believe in? How do those identities and beliefs get constructed over time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's doing it really, really, really well. I'm kind of blown away by how much I like Pillars of Eternity. I have downloaded Pillars of Eternity 2 on my computer. It is sitting there waiting for when I finally beat this game and I'm free of the Nintendo Switch and can actually play it on a system that is capable of running it properly, that doesn't have the worst performance issues and the worst bugs I've ever seen on a device. I'm thrilled with Pillars of Eternity.
Excellent. Well, the fact that, you know, it could speak to you that much despite all the hiccups on that platform seems to speak pretty highly of the game they've built. So cool. Well, we'll have to loop around when you get to the end of that to see how I want to hear what happens with the gods. But before we depart, let's take a brief dip into the question bucket. You can write in with your own questions to gamingadvice.com with the topic questions. This first one comes in Greg from Cleveland. Dear Waypoint, chatting with friends recently, I used the phrase, quote, coming in shit hot, in reference to Warhammer 40K Darktide's release date. I was immediately torn apart for it. Nobody else accepted or had heard this phrase used with anything other than positive connotations. Quote, that's hot, etc. Reflecting, I think I must have picked it up from Patrick or someone else in the Waypoint crew. Someone has said it often enough to infiltrate my internal phrase book. For my first question, how confident are you in the universality of this particular phrase? Might it have only had traction in your corner of games reporting? And more generally, has there ever been a phrase that you've used confidently, only to realize later that nobody else thinks it means what you think it means? Fuck capitalism. Go home, shit hot. Greg from Cleveland. I don't think I've used the term shit hot, but I feel like this could be a red phrase.
Before. I've never heard shit hot once in my life.
No?
I have never heard these sequence of syllables even once.
Coming in hot. Coming in hot.
Yeah.
Coming in hot. I know. Coming in hot means it's coming in really hot off the press. It's messy. Right. It's spicy. It's passionate.
Maybe we used it as, you know, the way that you toss in curse words just to like add emphasis to that phrase.
Because they're coming in hot and then they're coming in shit hot. I mean, I see. I can see it. I just don't.
But like,
I'm gonna need more evidence from the audience. Can anyone pinpoint where this this phrasing came from? Who said it? Why did they say it? In what context? Or is Greg from Cleveland gonna have to do some more introspective work to figure out what? Also, I just enjoy the fact that I feel like if someone said that, I would broadly know what they meant,
right?
Even if I'd not heard, like it's self-explanatory. And so, Greg from Cleveland. What kind of friends you got where you say a phrase that I feel like on its face is self-explanatory and then you are ripped apart for saying it? I think that is unnecessary. I think you're in the clear. Like, wherever you heard it from, here or somewhere else, shit hot is a phrase that I think makes sense, even though I don't think you heard it.
You can use context clues to figure it out. Like, it's not that hard, I feel like.
There's a new Blue's Clues movie coming out. Sit your friends down. Have them watch it. And then let's talk about shit hot again.
Yeah.
I was trying to think about the second question. There's a phrase you've used confidently, only to realize later that nobody else thinks it means what you think it means. I didn't have anything that came to mind.
Here's the thing. I know for a fact this has happened many times in my life. I couldn't fucking tell you a single one. I'm trying to remember them, right?
Isn't that part of the point?
Yeah.
Like, if you're so chronically misusing phrases, this happens with my wife. My wife is just incapable of internalizing the actual way to say popular turns of phrase.
Right.
And for a while, I was keeping a note that had them in it. And then it was just like, I can't. This is just embarrassing. You can't do this. And you know what she means?
Right.
But it's just not, it's not the phrase.
Quite.
So I can't think of something specific like this, but so when I was very young, I must have been 12 or 13. It was like I think it might have been one of the first E3s that I went to. And I ended up going to a meetup with some of the folks that I had met in IRC, who like were folks who wrote for like EGM and stuff like that. And, this is a trait that I still carry to this day. If you've listened to Waypoint Radio, in which I encounter a word that I've only ever looked at and then have to say, and there are some people who can suss it out. Like Rob can look at a name and kind of figure it out and say it with some confidence that it's in the ballpark. I can't do that. Like, and so I remember for some reason, I don't know the context, but I was like speaking in this room and I said persuadonym. And like the entire room just looks at me. Now, granted, I'm like 12 or whatever. They're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, like, you know, when you adopt a persuadonym and like pseudonym. Yeah, I guess so. Well, this sucks. Gonna mark that one away. And I've never forgotten that. Like when I say that word, I like will always feel that deep shame because it happened in such a public way in front of a bunch of people that I was trying to become like ingrained with and who are folks who are now close friends of mine, like are very responsible for my career. But like, it was one of those like hot shame moments that I've just never been able to shake. And whenever I say that word, I go right back to that place all over again.
Oh my God.
I don't think I have one.
Horrible.
Persuadonym.
Sweet on them.
That's all right. But if people have, you know, please write into gamingadvice.com.
I'll remember one in like 5 hours and be like, shit.
You will. Don't worry. I feel like people are going to write in with some public shamed moments and with their own persuadonym. And we can revisit this. Chris, stop laughing, Kato. Hey, Waypoint crew. The other day I was going to get my oil change and caused a slight issue for the mechanics due to driving a manual transmission car. Definitely my bad. Should have given them a heads up. So we back for a second on how much I despised learning a manual transmission at the age of 15, cruising around a cemetery with my mom, constantly angry about the car failing me, aka I couldn't shift between gears without killing the car. Are there any current skills you remember absolutely hating while learning, but are incredibly grateful you had someone push you through to learn? I now can't imagine driving anything other than a manual car, and I'm grateful every day my mom forced me to learn it when I started driving. Fuck capitalism, and keep up the great work. Chris.
I write in cursive. I didn't really hate learning to write in cursive, but I do.
You enjoy it now?
Yeah, I didn't write in cursive in high school, and then I realized that my handwriting, my print was completely fucking unintelligible, and then I was like, well, I guess I have to switch to cursive now, and then that's what I've written in since, and I actually like it a lot. It's very soothing to me now.
Oh, I hate cursive. The moment I was able to give that up, all I've got is my signature, but even that is, like, as now that signatures don't really mean anything, like, you'll sign for credit cards, but, like, they don't. It doesn't
check.
Really matter. It is just long, like long strokes of a pen to get to the other side. My dad hated signing for things so much that he just wrote like a T and then just a long line. And the credit card company at one point like called him and was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "That's just what I'm signing. I'm not changing it." And they went, "Okay." And just like, we'll just mark that down in your file as like this long T is what we're looking for when we're worrying about fraud alerts. Kyle, was there anything that you were forced to learn growing up? Do you have any sort of, it doesn't even have to be something that you're grateful for. You can still be annoyed about it now and not.
No, I feel like I didn't get forced into a lot of things, or even the things that were suggested, I didn't mind at the time. I guess playing the flute. I don't know if I would have picked band, but I was basically told like, if you're gonna get into the good high school, which is the performing arts high school, you have to do an art.
Pick an art, any art.
So I was
here's
like,
a wall of art, pick one.
I guess band.
Did you end up like really learning, or you just did it till you just kind of stumbled through it?
No, I had to learn, because the thing is, the performing arts middle school and high school are audition based. So you had to be good enough.
Oh, so you
had
to actually learn this fucking flute.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you still play a flute?
Oh yeah, I could play like the melody from Celine Dion's I Will Go On. Like that, I
can
had
you
to
go
memorize.
To the new Avatar movie with a flute, stand up in front of the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here to stand in tribute. That's incredible. I was forced to play basketball and baseball until eighth grade. Like once I got to high school, I could stop. But my dad had this. My mom thought it was ridiculous. She was like, "I'm sorry, you're home free when you get to, you know." Mm-hmm. It was not the kind of thing where like, "Hey, pick an alternative activity. You just have to do two things, you know, and like try and like come back to one year over year to build on a skill set." So no, you're going to play basketball and you're going to play baseball until eighth grade. And then I will cease to have any interest in what your activities are. Wow. And like, it sucked. I didn't mind basketball, but I hated baseball. And
yeah, baseball sucks.
I was forced to play it through eighth grade and then just could not.
Where would you end up on the field?
I was usually like shortstop.
It's an exciting place.
You were an infielder, so you actually got to play baseball.
Yeah,
yeah. I preferred that to the outfield because I hated watching a ball come. Like I never was able to like when it was like a sunny day and the ball gets hit in the air. I wasn't worried about getting hurt.
It's gonna get lost.
But it's like there's literally nothing more embarrassing than just straight up missing a ball
that
you put your hand out. What
is? No, there is. It's when it lands directly on the metal dot of your baseball cap, when the ball hits you in the head directly on that fucking metal dot. And so your shit gets stamped
up there.
that is more embarrassing. I played baseball also growing up. The problem was I didn't have my glasses yet, and my glasses are for depth perception only. I have really, really good vision, but I have slightly less than really, really good vision in one of my eyes. And so, yeah, I don't have good depth perception without them. And so for years,
boy, that would
like,
be difficult with
really
a ball
bad?
That is flying in
why
from the
I
sky,
really
perhaps.
Bad at baseball? And the answer was I couldn't see where the fucking ball was for most of my life. So yeah, I did baseball before stopping sports for like 5 years and then picking up soccer in eighth grade and then playing that for a few years until I had to leave for injury. The beautiful game game where
and I think part of the reason I like
lost to Croatia on fucking penalty kicks. Damn. Talking dog shit penalty kicks.
Part of the reason I liked baseball more than or basketball more than baseball was also baseball so individually focused on a play to play basis in which like the ball is coming to you. You're hitting the ball. You're throwing the ball. It is a team sport, but it begins on an individual play, and then that just increases the amount of pressure on. It's part of what's why it's a fun game to watch. I enjoy watching the battle between a pitcher and a batter. Like, that's awesome, but I don't enjoy doing it. And whereas in basketball, if you panicked, you could just throw the ball away and have someone else deal with it. And so there was less moment-to-moment pressure if you were feeling it. So a final question comes in from Lewis. Hey, Waypoint. A few years ago, we had an ice storm hit Oklahoma City in October. I say Oklahoma City specifically because any further north or south on the storm's path, it was a regular rain or sleet. This being October, most of the leaves were still on the trees, so more ice was able to form on the tree branches. The subsequent branch collapses left most of the city without ground power lines in the dark. We tried to use our gas fireplace for warmth, but it was mostly just made pretty lights and heated the area within a foot of the hearth. With small animals and another freezing night ahead, we decided to flee to a friend's place in Missouri with our gang of pets. We returned 4 or 5 days later when the temperature rose, hoping the power had returned for us like most of our friends in the city, but it had not. We then endured a situation much like Rob described, where we watched as everyone across the road and for streets around regained power. We were on the inside area of a terrace road and didn't get power back for 2 weeks. We went through the entire 2020 election with a battery radio and our phones. $10,000 plus $350 a year for maintenance. Later, we have a ground-fed natural gas generator wired to the breaker that has gotten us through a handful of bad spots in the years since. Unfortunately, when the Texas power grid almost went down and Oklahoma was on the verge of planned rolling blackouts and freezing weather, we learned that a natural gas shortage is also a possibility. So I'm in the market for a wood stove now. Lewis from Oklahoma City. This was a follow-up to a question we had discussing... what our prepper status was on an individual level, which then led to discussions of moments where we have been like feeling stranded, despite the fact that you are like surrounded by homes and society, and specifically in the winter when the power goes out for any length of time. Ren, growing up, did any instances where your family was caught without power for a period of time that became less interesting and more distressing?
How many hours? Like, are we talking days?
We're talking, for me, like, we had a freezing cold weather with a newborn, and then the power is out for 2+ days. So we abandoned the second day because the house is getting too cold. That was like, we were worried about the newborn. Rob's was out for, I want to say, the better part of a week, even though, because what ended up happening was, like, their house was on a part of the power grid that was only, like, two other houses, and so they were just so low on the priority list, and so they had to abandon the house at some point, I believe, and come back. So, what your definition of distressing is does not have to extend into days or weeks if, depending on the situation.
Yeah, no, I can't think of a time where it was that bad. I've been pretty lucky. It's mostly been like 12 hours, maybe 24 hours.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that is going to do it for Waypoint Radio and the question bucket. If you want to write in, you can do so to gamingadvice.com with the subject line questions. As I mentioned earlier, we have a sale ongoing. As you listen to this, if you've been waiting for a chance to re-up, to sign up, or to gift a Waypoint Plus sub. And also, the best time to do it is now, not only for the sub, but when you're doing end-of-year data collection to show to our superiors, how is Waypoint Plus doing? The best time to sign up is now. They're paying attention now. you can save 25% by going to waypointplus.com between December 6th and December 13th. Use the code WAYHOLIDAY, it gets you all the perks that, we've had on Waypoint Plus before. You get access to, a number of podcasts early, all podcasts without ads. Waypoint Plus is what unlocks, me being able to play Cyberpunk all day, which I've been doing for, you know, the last month and change. And we are now heading towards the end game of that because of the Waypoint Plus subscribers, you know, doing sports, doing my turn, in which we are pretty soon finally going to watch the movie that Ren picked, Nostalgia.
Sorry.
If you want to be able to listen to that first, you're going to want to sign up over at waypointplus.com. during the holiday sale for the next week, where you can save 25% off using the code WAYHOLIDAY. Where is the rest of my outro? Here it is. Oh, well, I would tell you this was brought to you by Waypoint Plus, but I just told you it was brought to you by Waypoint Plus. Our theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can learn more at waypoint.zone/Bowen. You can follow us on Twitter at Waypoint, on Facebook and YouTube at Waypoint Vice. You can follow my work at Patrick Klupik on Twitter for the time being. I don't know when that joke stops become like for the time being. Unfortunately, we're in a chaos state where I guess it's still going to be up. It survived the World Cup, or it has survived the World Cup so far. But Kata, where can people follow you?
On Twitter for now at @A_Kato_appears.
Ren.
At Ren or Raven.
That's us calling time on this podcast. We'll be back later this week. Stay tuned for more details on how all the streams are going to be happening. But again, depending on when this podcast goes out, Kato and Rob will be doing some motorsports in the office in New York. We'll be doing an all-day stream on Wednesday with The Quarry and with Natalie Watson, and then hopefully watching the Game Awards on Thursday evening, and then doing something else next Tuesday to celebrate the end of the sale. Until all of that, fuck capitalism. Except for the sale at waypointplus.com, where you get 25% off if you use the code WAYHOLIDAY. Go home.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I need to get water. Kata, do they get the music sting still? If they have the Waypoint Plus version, the ad-free version?
I think so, right? Yeah. It just kind of floats in and out and then comes back, right? Yeah.
All right, I need to get my water.
Waypoint Plus Plus, no edits.
No edits. Raw files. Waypoint Plus Plus, I go, ooh, and so you can hear that you didn't have any cuts. It's been so long. I'm coming home.
Well, it's not coming home. The U.S. team lost on Saturday.
No.
It wouldn't even be. I don't claim them. Coming home.
Yeah, we can. We can appropriate whatever the fuck we want, Kato. Have you been to? How much time have you been in America?
Jesus Christ! I was born here my entire life.
Well, then, yeah. Patrick. Look, you're home. You're home,
bro.
You're home.
Jesus,
you are home.
Christ.
It's coming home. It's coming. Get it together.
I've actually decided that I'm a French national citizen for the remainder of this tournament.
Yeah,
Kylian Mbappe built different.
Well, that's the beauty of men's soccer is that the U.S. team sucks shit compared to the women, and so you just get to try on like a little like what other country do I want to be for this tournament? Because I'm not going to be rooting for the Americans. The women's team is excellent. So good. That's what 2 years, right? Is that alternate every 2 years?
I'm so excited.
Yeah, they're very good.
My basic rule for who I root for is I root for France unless they're playing against a former colony, at which point I root for the former colony. that is my rule.
I think you need to produce a some sort of like if then infographic for people to have a sense of the morality of rooting for the French team.
France made it to the knockout stage and lost to Tunisia. That's the best possible outcome for me. I cannot think of a better outcome than France losing to Tunisia and making it to the knockout stage. Incredible. Incredible for me. Sorry, as you were saying, Patrick, let's start the show.
All right, let's clap at 15. All right, everyone ready?
Yes. Does anyone else's time.is sometimes hang on a second and make you doubt your understanding of how long a second
time,
is?
Despite the fact that all time.is is designed to do is display a number, it does occasionally hiccup even on powerful PCs. It does. Okay. We've definitely had instances where we've done had to reclap because somebody saw it jump a second and a half, which I feel like it's just haunted. So the fact that you've made it this far without experiencing that is pretty funny.
It's been unsettling me for a while. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to convince myself that my weird brain disorders mean that I just don't know how time works.
No, I mean, that could still be true. I can't help you fully on that front, but I can tell you the time.is is maybe not the most efficient website, despite that it being the entire attraction of it. When I did the Nextlender podcast, they do theirs with a website that beeps synchronized. So you hold your phone up to the microphone, fuck, and it beeps, and then you don't have to actually do anything else. It was kind of neat.
Beeping website?
I need the joy of the clap.
Hold on. I'll send it to you. Where is it? Yeah, beep30.com.
Beep30.
And it's synced into the API from time.is, which is the funniest part. So it's using time.is's time to produce a beep.
It only beeps every 30 seconds, though?
You can change it.
Okay.
I think there's a way to, like, manipulate the...
Incredible.
Yeah, if you hit the little gear in the corner.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow. Look at that.
You can. I think they had theirs at every 10 seconds. The more you know.
I love numbers.
Numbers.